Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. Pump Site Geek to be back at it. Peter King on board today. Monday morning quarterback, the best in the business nationally around the National Football League, SportsIllustrated.com, NFL writer, thoughts, storylines, the start of training camps for the NFL opening up. We start to ramp up our NFL coverage here. Michael Della Russa with us every week, AZ United SC. We talk United in the 11 o'clock hour for a couple of minutes at about 11:05. In between that, a lot of this is on my mind in the world of sports today. It is good to have Eric Sorensen back. Eric is back after a sabbatical. The contract that he signed calls for 330 days of vacation and 30 days where he actually shows up to work. It's good to see you. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, it's nice to get out of the rain. I just got back from Southern California. Go figure. That makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? So I go to California, Atlanta Beach, and I get 48 hours of rain. But hey,
this was a wedding anniversary, right?
Yeah. First one.
First one. You're going to make it the second one, you think?
Of course.
Did you do a good job on the first one?
Absolutely.
Did you take her what? Starbucks and coffee? And
no, we had a nice
Tommy's, donuts.
We did a little surf and turf.
Surf and turf. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At a swanky restaurant in Newport. So,
wow. Listen to you.
I checked all the boxes. So that's good.
When you get to 26, you're lucky if it's In-N-Out burgers. You're just lucky. You know, that's all I'm going to say on that front.
That's great. That gives me something to look forward
something
to.
Something to aim towards. Something like that. Yeah. All right. Well, it's good to have you back. I'm pretty excited about all these college football media days that are starting to go on because I'm hearing some nonsense I'm going to get to in a little bit. Like the Big 12 thinks that they're all that, and the Pac-12 may need to be aggressive on some of these moves. So I'm interested in that front today. Watched some baseball last night. Even though the Diamondbacks are out of it, they're still very entertaining. I have the baseball package. So, like, my wife's trying to get me to watch American Ninja Warrior. Do you watch that show, E? Are you in on that one?
No, believe it or not. We watch a lot of bad television, but that's one we do not watch.
Jared's nodding his head. So, for whatever reason, my wife just thinks it's really cool to watch this garbage July television show where these people are trying to climb backwards, right ways, left ways. And they always have the pregnant wife there with two kids with a pacifier shoved in the kid's mouth. And they're cheering wildly for dad who falls into water. Fortunately, I have an office and I could just go watch a bunch of baseball last night and some old stuff on Netflix. So that said, let's get you caught up some things on my mind in the world of sports. There's some offbeat stuff today, too, that Eric's found that's pretty cool. Here's what's on my mind in the world of sports, brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. My Santan Ford experience, day in, day out. I drive the Ford Fusion, the hybrid edition. I was getting 54 miles to the gallon on my trip to California this last week. Had to run out there, had to be part of a service for a good friend that passed away. You know, we have things that come up in life that are unexpected. Fortunately, I didn't go back through the 10 because my sync support system said alert. Alert, as I was pulling out of the parking lot from the church after this service, it was time to head home. I could either go up to the 10 and over, or I could go down to the 8. And my sync support system said, do not go to I-10 because there was something wrong. Yeah, if something was wrong, was the bridge was out. Did you get caught in that, by the way, coming back?
Did not. Thanks to social media.
Yeah.
We were able to avoid that and went down, took a little... I know, detour down the coast.
Yuma?
No, yeah, down the coast from Newport to San Diego and then cut across the desert through the mountains. And
listen to your El Swanky, Newport to San Diego. Nice.
That's just...
Stop in Welton? Welton's a great spot.
No, we did pass...
Dateshake, Dateland?
Yeah, we did pass Dateland.
Yeah, that's good you passed it because it would have passed you if you'd stopped.
It's pretty easy to pass.
That's all I'm going to say. It's not really easy to pass if you stop, so I'm just going to say that. So, you know, that's the experience for me. Santan Ford just off the Santan 202, where we drive around. I'm going to drive back out next week off the Santan 202 in Val Vista, Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Appreciate their support. All right. So Peter King's going to be with us in a couple of minutes. And I want to talk to Peter about, is there another player that is as important to their team's postseason chances? And you can always say it starts with the quarterback. I get it. But it seems to me, with the Cardinals opening camp next week, that more than any other team, there's this emphasis on if Carson Palmer stands upright. And I want to talk to Peter about that. You could say the same thing about Brady. You could say the same thing about Manning. Carson is, we saw what happened last year where the team just absolutely collapsed. And also, from Peter's perspective, he's a Hall of Fame voter. Adrian Wilson is going into the Ring of Honor for the Cardinals. That was announced yesterday afternoon. I think one of the more underrated players. He played on some really bad teams here in Arizona, and I'm being kind, and never wanted to leave. And, you know, what's the view nationally inside that room if you're talking about Adrian Peterson? Aeneas Williams played on some awful teams here, too, and then really hit his mark when he was with St. Louis. So we'll talk to Peter about all that. That's coming up here in a few minutes. All right, I'm going to start with the Diamondbacks and the trade deadline because I think there's some things that are of interest to me, and then some college football before we get to Peter. So the Diamondbacks win last night. De La Rosa pitches pretty well, 7 innings. Ziegler gets the saves. A little bit of a rough spot for him, but they get the win. The trade deadline is next week. In my opinion, the Diamondbacks are just teetering on the wild card. They're probably the last wild card team standing in terms of somebody that could make it. It's a huge hurdle for them. Probably not going to happen. However, they have some pieces that I think could be sold off. More importantly, play this game with me for a minute. Are there some players that, as you look at, that the Diamondbacks could pursue in putting together a team for 2016 and beyond? And I'll give you a couple names. And yeah, there's a lot of money tied up in them, but at some point, the Diamondbacks are going to have to throw a lot of money into their rotation because they're going to throw a lot of money at their first baseman. And by the way, you nitwit Mets fans that think that Paul Goldschmidt is going to be traded from here, get over yourself. It's not happening. Just move on. I'm tired of getting these notes from these. Dude, we've got the greatest pitching. What can we do to get Goldschmidt? Well, first of all, it's not we. I'm not on the team with you. Don't care. So back off, all right? But David Price, so yesterday comes out in USA Today that David Price is going to be on the market by Detroit. You can look at the trade deadline one of two ways. Either you're in the market to compete this year for the postseason, or it's what can we do for 2016 and we could come up with a bargain. Now, financially, is he a bargain? No, he's not a bargain, but there's some players I think that are out there that are of interest to me. There's other players that are going to get moved. Like Justin Upton's going to get traded again. He's going to. I have no interest in having him here. But if I'm the Pirates, I probably go after Justin Upton. If I'm the Angels, if I'm the Mets, I probably go after Justin Upton. In Houston, because A.J. Hinch is the manager down there, he's very familiar with some of these Padres like Ian Kennedy, like Justin Upton, like Tyson Ross. Gerardo Parra's become a hot commodity. Who knew? He's sitting over there in Milwaukee with Carlos Gomez. I throw all these names out there. None of them really make sense to me. Like Cespedes is available with Detroit. But if I'm the Diamondbacks trying to build towards next season or perhaps make a late season run, do you go after some of these guys now or do you wait for the postseason to clear out in the winter meetings? So that's on my mind today. The Diamondbacks play tonight. Big 12 Media Day is going on right now. When I talk about the Big 12, I do so lovingly because Eric has a man crush on his TCU Horned Frogs, and there's Baylor that's sitting there, and there's nothing better than, in my mind, having Baylor and TCU meet head-to-head and seeing the sweat just pour out of my poor friend's forehead because he's scared to death that his team is going to get run over this year. If this was 10 years ago and I would have told you Baylor and TCU were playing for the Big 12 championship, you would have said you're high. There's no way that that's happening. Big 12, and this leads me over to Arizona State and Arizona, because I think that there's something that's going to be happening here sooner than later involving the Big 12. So yesterday they started their meetings. We'll be at Pac-12 Media Day next week for a couple days. Bob Bowlesby is the commissioner of the Big 12, and he was asked about not having the Big 12 title game. If we remember what happened last year in the college football playoff, no Big 12 title game. We saw what happened. Ohio State crushed Wisconsin. Ohio State gets in. Baylor TCU gets shut out. So here we are 6 months later. They still don't have it figured out. In fact, they don't have 12 teams. Here's Bob Bowlesby.
1 year doesn't make a trend. I don't believe we're disadvantaged at this point, but that doesn't mean a disadvantage couldn't develop. Or couldn't be shown to exist, but I think it's the majority of our CEOs right now that believe likewise.
Okay, so a majority of your CEOs, we're going to talk further about this in about 20 minutes. What they want in Iowa State should not matter. What they want in Kansas should not matter. Kansas State, Bill Snyder, very loyal following, okay? But if you go up and down the Big 12, what has happened to that conference? And if I'm the Pac-12, if I'm the Big Ten, guys, let's be honest here. What did Nebraska do? Nebraska said, let's get the heck out of here and let's get over to the Big Ten sooner than later. What did Texas A&M do? Let's get the heck out of here and let's get over to the Southeastern Conference. So in about 20 minutes, I'm going to talk about how schools like Oklahoma, Texas, Florida State, and Clemson should be on everybody's radar screen because we're heading towards going from five major conferences to four. It's coming. And you don't want to be Connecticut. You don't want to be Iowa State. You don't want to be San Diego State. You don't want to be Cincinnati. We're just kind of sort of floating around out there like whatever happened to us. And the same thing goes for ASU and U of A, and I'll explain why. That's in about 20 minutes. Notre Dame's got to be involved in this discussion too. So we'll get into that. This, I don't know if you've heard about Shaq and Scottie Pippen going back and forth. Shaq called him Scottina last night. Scottina. Scottie is not very happy with all this. This is essentially Shaq saying Pippen wasn't a man without Michael Jordan. He was a woman named Scottina. Of course he was. So when these guys get done playing and they get bored, now they go after one another. So we're going to go after this story a little bit further. And then the Indiana Pacers are in this Today Show. They have their new jerseys. They're just hideous. But on the other side, we'll switch gears to Peter King. Peter King joins us next. One of the best in the business. Sports Illustrated NFL writer, the Monday morning quarterback. That's on the other side. We'll talk a lot about the Cardinals. Could there be another Brett Favre 67,000-seat stadium filled with any other player in the NFL? And the NFL in LA, that's next with Peter King.
For in-depth, unique coverage from the high schools to the pros, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
It's called Before the Storm. Next Friday, Cardinals report to camp. Next Thursday and Friday, we'll be in Los Angeles at Pac-12 Football Media Day with the show on the road. Thanks to Santan Ford. Sports 360 AZ, we partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Brad Sussmat with you. The MMQB's Peter King joins us now, SI.com, senior NFL writer. Always good to catch up all things around the National Football League. It's been a while. Thanks, Peter, for coming on board. How are you?
Sure, Brad. Everything's going great. Yourself?
Ruby De La Rosa was pretty good last night. I think we got to start dumping some salaries out here on the baseball front. I think your Red Sox are in a lot of trouble. How's that for an answer?
Oh, in a lot of trouble. They're
not good.
They're in a coma. Welcome to everybody's kind of looking forward to opening day 2016 already.
They're looking forward to training camps getting started. What are your top three storylines coming into training camp this year? I mean, I'm sure you could give me top 50, top 100, but what are just three things that you're looking at? Like, I'm really interested because you tour all the camps every year, and I'm assuming you're doing that again.
Yeah, I would say, the end game with the Patriots and Tom Brady and Jimmy Garoppolo and Roger Goodell and all that, I think that is going to be a great angle in the next 7 weeks. I mean, you know, the Patriots have a game in 7 weeks, and they don't know who their quarterback is going to be. And honestly, I think it's got to be a little bit maddening for them right now because clearly you want to know going into camp if you need to get Jimmy Garoppolo ready. And today, as we sit here right now, Bill Belichick doesn't know how much practice to give Jimmy Garoppolo, if any. You know, I think that's number one. Number two is all things San Francisco. Is Jim Tomsula ready for this gig? Is Colin Kaepernick ready to show that he can be a consistent NFL quarterback? Do they have enough elements on defense? I mean, the 49ers have about four times as many questions as the average NFL team entering camp. And then I think the one thing I'm interested in, and I don't expect there to be a revolution, but I'm really interested to see how many teams actually are going to play the point after touchdown any differently this year. I tend to think that with the line of scrimmage for the point after touchdown being pushed from the 2 to the 15, that early in the season it's going to have very little difference in what coaches choose to do. But as the season goes on, I think the smart teams the smart coaches, the smart special teams coaches, are going to be practicing more and more of their spread formations from the two-yard line so that on inclement days in November and December and January, they might be tempted to, especially if you have a Russell Wilson or type quarterback, a mobile quarterback, a Teddy Bridgewater, that you might be thinking a little bit more of putting your quarterback out on the edge and trying to go for two. So, I don't know. I think those are three things, but honestly, if we sat here for a half hour, I could come up with 33.
No, sure, sure. No, I get it. I get it. Peter King with us for a couple of minutes. I think part of it, to me, you wrote about it, or your site had it today, the MMQB is Los Angeles. I think Los Angeles, it's in a couple of weeks where there's a meeting on it. It's going to overshadow some cities all season long, is it not?
Well, I think it will, because on August 11th, I think there's going to be a significant meeting in Chicago. And there is going to be a significant meeting in Chicago that is basically going to, I think, tell the cities involved what the market studies have told the NFL about Los Angeles, about St. Louis, about Oakland, and about San Diego. I think a lot of people know at this point that the NFL seems bound and determined right now to have a team or two teams playing in Los Angeles as early as 2016. I think my only fear about that from the NFL standpoint is I seriously wonder whether there certainly is the populace in the Los Angeles area to support two teams. There's the populace probably to support three. But it's difficult, especially going into a territory that hasn't had a team now for 21 years. And when they lost two on the same day on Christmas Eve 1994, that was the last time a game was played there. And actually, there were two games played simultaneously at 1 o'clock Pacific time on that day in L.A. Mm. But honestly, I think everybody figures that the NFL is going to put at least one team there, and they may put two. I think the way I look at it, Brad, is that even though the Rams seem the most illogical team to move, based on the fact that they've got such a better situation than either San Diego or Oakland in St. Louis. Because the city fathers and state government in Missouri are going to, or at least they've said they're going to build a new stadium, along the river in downtown St. Louis. But having said that, Oakland and San Diego almost need to move because they're not going to get new stadiums where they are. So
right.
It's kind of a very complex mating dance right now with Los Angeles.
No, it's interesting. I was just in San Diego over the weekend, and boy, there's a lot of bitter people out there. But the facts are that the stadium's a dump, and I worked out there, grew up out there, and the stadium hasn't changed. So they've got to move forward on it. Peter King with us for a couple of minutes, the MMQB. All right, some things here locally. Carson Palmer, you can make the case and list any quarterback that the team's going to be only as good as the quarterback. But if we look nationally and then focus in on Arizona, the narrative is if Carson Palmer is upright and Carson Palmer has a productive season, then the Arizona Cardinals are going to be a very, very good team. And we saw how they got run over in the postseason after Carson went down. Are you in that camp that this is clearly, if Carson Palmer succeeds, the Cardinals will succeed?
You know, he's one, I think, that's absolutely right. I think he is, we can make the point right now that with almost any team in football, their most valuable person is the quarterback.
Sure.
But there are so many of, it's almost like everything else is in place in Arizona. And as long as Carson Palmer can play, I'd say if the over-under is 14, Carson Palmer plays 14 games, in my opinion, Arizona's a playoff team. If he plays 10 to 12, I think they're really going to struggle to make the playoffs. And if he plays less, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. So, I mean, as sort of pulling numbers out of a hat goes, that is approximately how I view their chances for the playoffs.
There's conversation out here about Jermaine Gresham, Peter. He was visited with New Orleans, Bruce and Steve Keim. This is a Steve Keim special, I call it. You get about a week before training camp, and Steve always pulls players out. Tommy Kelly last year was an example, and there's many, many others I could mention too. But Jermaine Gresham, do you see gas left in the tank for him? Is New Orleans a better fit because of the tight end with Jimmy Graham? Are the Cardinals in the advantage because they have more money to spend? How do you see Jermaine Gresham?
I don't think Jermaine Gresham was a great effort player with the Bengals. I think he was always a disappointment there. I certainly don't look at him as a huge difference maker for a team. But when you are as bereft, or not bereft, but I mean, when you are, the Cardinals are in the bottom third in the league in tight end talent. I think we probably all agree with that. And they're relying obviously on last year's second round pick to Troy Nicholas to basically step up this year and become a really good player, good contributor, good security blanket for Carson Palmer. He really hasn't done it yet. They don't have anybody who's done it yet. So that's why I think it's pretty logical that they would take a look at Gresham. But the day that whoever signs Jermaine Gresham, I would view him as very much a complementary piece of the puzzle and not a surefire, very solid NFL starter. He'd have been signed by now if he was.
Fair enough. Adrian Wilson, yesterday the Cardinals announced he's going into the Ring of Honor, and I think rightly so. Much like Aeneas Williams, he played on some just awful teams out here that had no chance, and yet he never wanted to leave. He was always very loyal. He tried to recruit players back here in the very, 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 very exclamation point lean days that the Cardinals had for so many years. Peter, if he played in a major market on some winning teams, how would the Hall of Fame discussion be for him?
I always thought that Adrian Wilson was one of those guys who like a, I don't know, and I'll go back in history on this, like a Tommy Nobis was with Atlanta. A guy who I've always thought deserved more discussion for the Hall of Fame than he's gotten. I mean, my feeling is that Adrian Wilson on a better team would have had a better opportunity, certainly a much better opportunity. But here's the other problem. Safeties historically have really gotten the short end of the stick. When you talk about the Hall of Fame. And so I don't know that if, let's say, Adrian Wilson was a New England Patriot, let's say, or something like that, if he in the 2010, in the first decade of the 2000s, whatever we call that, I don't know if that would have sealed his fate as a Hall of Famer, but it certainly would have made him have a much better chance.
Yeah. No, I think it's rightly so they're putting him in. It's just he played in those Sun Devil Stadium games, and you were in that place where it was just an empty cavern, and he decided to stick it out here. So it's good stuff on that front. I appreciate catching up with you, and we'll talk soon. As always, thanks for the time.
Thanks a lot, Brad. Have a great day.
Good talking to you, Peter. Peter King, the MMQB, with us for a couple of minutes. SI.com senior NFL writer. On the other side, we're going to switch back over on the college front. So the Big 12 today is taking the stance of, well, we really don't need to change anything. Well, I don't know. If Texas and Oklahoma were relevant and you didn't have little old TCU and little old Baylor suddenly becoming national players, is your conference about to get raided? We're going to talk about that on the other side. And much more as we continue on a Tuesday. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Before you know, it's September 3rd will be here. That's the start of college football season. Michigan and Utah, all over that. U of A opens the season on the same night against UTSA. I think Jared's going to that game. Are you going to that one, E? Are you going to make a run to Tucson for that one? Texas, San Antonio, or we find in our way to see Harbaugh's debut against Utah.
Is that a Thursday night game?
Thursday night game.
No, I'll be watching TCU-Minnesota. Sorry.
TCU-Minnesota opens that night?
That's correct.
Is that right?
Yeah.
The third?
It does. It's the Thursday night ESPN game.
Well, where is the Utah-Michigan game on that Thursday? You don't want to watch Harbaugh on his debut? That doesn't interest you? I know you're a TCU fan. You're going to roll Minnesota, aren't you?
It interests me, but I got to watch the Frogs.
Shut up. Get out of here. Really? Why aren't you taking a flight to that one? That's at Minnesota. You guys will dominate that stadium. There'll be a lot more purple than that burgundy and yellow in Minnesota.
I don't think so. That's a Thursday night game.
You
think? It's not like Fort Worth to Minneapolis is, you know, a nice easy drive or a short little flight.
Who's going to win more games, ASU or TCU?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say TCU, but I expect both teams to not finish where they are at least projected early in the season.
So TCU's non-conferences versus ASU's.
They play... ASU has a better non-conference schedule.
Yeah, they have Texas A&M.
Just because they have a higher tiered game. You know, how it works is it's always TCU plays a pretty good team, SMU every year because that's their finger-quote rivalry game, and then they play...
But they'll crush SMU.
And then they play an SEC non-conference team like, I don't know, Bethune-Cookman or fill-in-the-blank, whoever. Stephen F. Austin, I think, too, this year, so...
Okay, yeah, I just flipped over there. So it's Stephen F. Austin. So who will have more wins, U of A or TCU?
TCU.
Okay. So and you think TCU is going to be in the college football playoff?
I actually don't. I think they're going to win 9-10 games, but I can't see them getting to Glendale just because they lose all their linebackers and they have some really tricky road games this year, including at Oklahoma State, at Oklahoma, and at K-State.
But you have the best quarterback in the conference.
Probably in the country, to be honest with you.
But yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, again, it's hard to go undefeated. It's so hard to do. They're going to be good. They're going to roll through the Big 12. Well, maybe. I mean, it just takes one bad game. They almost lost to Kansas last year, so anything is possible.
So you go to Minnesota, and you think you'll win there. Then you have Stephen F. Austin. That's a layup. Then you have SMU at home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, ASU, let me just flip over here. ASU has their Texas A&M game. Then they have Cal Poly and they have New Mexico. So they're both going to be 3-0. U of A has, who's U of A? U of A
UTSA,
has Texas.
UTSA, NAU.
At Nevada.
At Nevada.
And NAU.
Trap game, but should win.
At Nevada?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so both teams, all three teams will be 3-0. Then the Frogs go to Texas Tech. They have Texas as their homecoming game. Isn't that kind of a swipe at Texas? Don't you usually schedule like the weakest of the sisters of the poorest, right?
Well, you talked about the problems with the Big 12.
Yeah, and I'm going to get into
that.
And
at the top of that, Brad, I mean, you talked about A&M and Nebraska losing. If I'm the Big 12, you know what I'm saying to A&M Nebraska? When was the last time you guys won a conference title? Nebraska was 1999, and A&M it was 2000, and they got a share in like 2004 or 2005.
But are they in a better conference?
Would you argue the Big 10 is better than the Big 12? Probably.
Okay, well, let's define the argument. If it's television markets, there's no question I've got to be in the Big 10 versus the Big 12.
Yes.
I have to be in Chicago.
Yes.
Okay, so and so that negates itself. But look, Oklahoma and Texas can't find their backsides with either hand. Those programs have been a train wreck.
And you know why? It's pretty simple. Oklahoma and Texas don't have quarterbacks. How is that possible? Neither of those schools in the last couple of years have been able to generate a decent quarterback. Thus, you have a 7-win season, a 6-win season. Last year, I think Oklahoma won 8 games or 9 games, far below Sooner standards when it comes to what they have been projected to do and things like that.
Okay, so this leads into the Pac-12, right? So right now, as we're sitting here today, and I've talked to some people much smarter than I will ever be. Next week at Pac-12 Media Day, we'll talk to very smart people about this. There will be a lot of political questions asked to Larry Scott, much like Bob Bowlsby. These conference commissioners are sitting there weaving and bobbing right now because, look, it's already happened. The Big 12 was raided when Nebraska was poached away. When Texas A&M was poached to go into the SEC, those conferences went after them. You cannot tell me that in the middle of the night, there's not going to be a phone call, whether it's Larry Scott on the other end of the line calling the Big 12 or calling schools, not the Big 12, calling schools saying, hey, get your stuff over here and let's figure this out. Here's more of Bob Bowlsby. And for college football fans and college fans in general, there's a point of where you've gone too far. Like, I don't think Colorado and Utah have been the greatest additions to the Pac-12 conference. I don't find them to be the best. Yeah, their basketball has been pretty good. Their football team's gotten better up at Utah. But I don't sense that there's really this big push versus if it was Texas that came in to the Pac-12 conference. And how ironic would that be if Steve Patterson led the charge, if he's still there standing in about 6 months, the way things are going? Here's Bob Bowlesby on what we have to do is best for the Big 12. Now, this is the leader of the conference.
Well, I think if it's a thoughtful process and it's one that everybody participates in, I think it can be a good thing for us. I think in the end, whatever we do, whether we expand or we don't, whether we have a championship or we don't, it will have been well considered, it will have been well thought out, and everybody will have participated in it.
Okay, it's very nice. He's a Stanford guy. It's saying all the politically correct things. If we decide to expand, so let's start at that point. Who in God's green earth is going to leave their present conference of the Power Five to say, boy, going to the Big 12 is going to be a much better opportunity for us? Boise State? That's a possibility, I suppose. BYU? No, they have their own television network. That's a problem. That's a problem. So BYU is the one that's getting shut out all across the country. Is Florida State, Clemson, would they look at leaving the ACC? Sure they would, because they get tired of being pushed around by North Carolina and some of the others. But do you really want a conference that is geometrically so far apart, so spread out? In terms of not having a title game, I just think you're living in a cave. I'm sorry. Other than if you can strengthen up your schedules across the board and make Oklahoma and Texas relevant, Eric, I think your conference is always going to be, I don't say your conference, but I think TCU is always going to be in a very difficult spot.
And they put themselves behind the eight ball a little bit, especially this year, because the quote-unquote conference game of the year is Black Friday, Baylor at TCU. Well, if they had a championship game, if those two teams played and both were undefeated, would those two teams play again like 2 weeks later in a championship game? And if you won the regular season game but lost the title game, you wouldn't be real happy. And then you're still back to square one because you're going to have two teams with one loss. They each beat each other pretty similar to last year. Each team had one loss. Baylor came back, beat TCU, but Baylor lost to West Virginia, blah, blah, blah. That's water under the bridge. And they're hurting themselves too because in early December, there is no marquee Big 12 game this year.
If your slogan is one true champion, there is no one true champion. That's dumb too, right?
It's really dumb.
Okay, so
really dumb.
Now you're starting to sound like Charlie Brown. I'm trying to convince you to come over to my side of the street on this, that I think the Big 12 is, I'm rating them. If I'm the commissioner of the SEC or if I'm in the ACC, if I'm in the Pac-12 or the Big 10, I'm going after Texas and Oklahoma in a big way. I can make the case of trying to go after TCU and Baylor because of the Dallas market. I could make that case. It's all about television markets. Okay, and here's the Pac-12. They still don't have their television thing solved. It's all these years later. It's estimated it's 8 to 10 million a year that they've lost on this deal. Okay, and you hear that athletic directors aren't happy that they've lost this $8 to $10 million. And you don't have the reach that you once had. So if you're Arizona State, would you rather go play TCU or Baylor? I'm sure the ASU people would say, no, we'd rather not have any schools down in Texas that we have to compete against because we're in the Pac-12 conference. I think that's a little short-sighted. Okay, go compete against Texas and get the best players out of Texas to come play in the Pac-12.
Because it's free eyeballs. I mean, if you're going out and you're playing schools in and around the Metroplex, where Todd Graham is from and familiar with,
and even when Todd moves on, because someday Todd will move on.
He will.
But just the program.
I mean, ASU, just like this year, it's a great platform game for ASU regardless of what happens. They're playing A&M. It's in Houston. They're going to be playing in front of a big crowd, and it's the showcase game of the weekend, most people feel. It's great. I mean, there's a lot more build-up this year to ASU opening with A&M than last year when they opened on a Thursday night at home against Sacramento State.
No. I understand that. I like the fact that the administration over at ASU, okay, they're willing to go in the last few years. They've finally gotten over the top of just scheduling nothing games.
Oh, sure. There have been lots
of. When we had the Wisconsin and Notre Dame.
Yeah, of course.
And
big buzz games. Yes. I mean, ASU played Stanford here 2 years ago in the Pac-12 title game, and people were beyond excited to see that game.
Yeah. I just think that this is a point in time. Nothing would surprise me if I woke up and there is the Pac-12 conference has entered into negotiations to bring Oklahoma and Texas. Those are the only two I really want. I don't think I'd want Oklahoma State. Would I want TCU and Baylor? They're probably not big enough with all the other sports, but
not
academically.
True. No, no, no. The Pac-12 would be tripping to get TCU.
TCU?
Well, of course. Look at the market.
For all sports.
Of course.
Would I rather have Texas or TCU? I'd rather have Texas. They're not that close. Come on. I know you graduated from there, but geez, oh man.
Think about it, Brad. Think about it. Okay, who's been better in football the last 2 years? I say it's a push. I say it's a push.
No, TCU's been better than Texas. Come on. Texas has been awful in football the last 2 years.
Who's been better in baseball? TCU.
TCU.
Who's been better in basketball? Texas. But has Texas been that much better in basketball?
Yeah, but their whole athletic department's been down. That's my point.
But of course.
If they bounce back, those two schools alone would make the Pac-12 a major, major player.
Of course, they're both heavyweights. But don't rule out the Dallas-Fort Worth TV market.
No, I agree.
Because they want eyeballs.
I agree. There's just nobody else there. I don't want Kansas State. I don't want West Virginia.
Doesn't make sense.
I don't want Texas Tech. I don't want Iowa State.
Doesn't make sense.
It's like what I'm hearing in basketball. The Gonzaga's trying to join the Big East and get out of where they are in the West Coast Conference. I mean, come on. Is Gonzaga just going to be the Harlem Globetrotters and travel around the world and play Georgetown and then fly home and then have Syracuse? Come on. That doesn't make any sense.
But why does Gonzaga need to do that? They don't. They play
want a bigger conference.
But they play a great non-conference schedule.
They play at 10 o'clock at night on ESPN, 1 o'clock in the morning.
But it's different in basketball than it is in college football. You don't have to, like, in college football, you have to have these huge week-after-week marquee games. There's very little margin for error. Gonzaga played U of A. They play in the Maui Classic. They play all these great non-conference schools.
Because they have to.
They're in
the middle of nowhere.
But that makes more sense than traveling back east every week, right?
No, I agree with you. I agree with you on that. Pippen and Shaq are fighting. We're going to get into this. I mean, it's the point where it's borderline ridiculous. Like, is it just Shaq trying to stir something up in the middle of summer? Or maybe you agree with him. And the Indiana Pacers have a jersey that they are going to use this year that you could either say is very cool, very throwback-ish, or kind of like-ish. I'll explain that on the other side. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So Eric came to me about a half hour before the show, and he said, do you see these jerseys that the Pacers are going to wear? I'm busy running around doing show stuff and talking and doing my thing. And I looked at him, and we have a picture of him, right? The Indiana Pacers, these are the uniforms that they're going to wear. It's the 30th anniversary of Hoosiers. So they're going to be wearing the Hickory-inspired uniforms. Okay, this is kind of cool.
Yeah, George Hill looks pretty good in the Hickory gold and red or whatever those colors are. I think gold and red.
So what they're saying is that these are the Hickory-inspired uniforms. This is according to Angelo Pizzo, okay? He wrote and produced the film Hoosiers with director David Arnsbaum. He's quoted here in the last hour as saying, maybe some sort of mix between the current uniform and Hickory, but those are the exact jerseys. It's obviously quite amazing to see that. So they will be wearing the Hickory Pacers. Are you going to run out and get one of those?
Of
those bad boys?
No, but I think it's cool. It's cool that they're honoring them. It's 30-year anniversary, as you mentioned, and it's just good for basketball. I mean, especially in that state. That's such an iconic movie, and the Pacers are just, I don't know, doing their part to honor the Hickory Hoosiers.
Get Dennis Hopper for Best Supporting Actor and throw one of those on him. And I mean, but you know, when you see Hoosiers, it's a simpler time.
Of course.
Right?
And the Pacers could do cool promos leading up to this. I'm sure their video people are already thinking of ways that we could promo you wearing these upcoming, I don't know, maybe go out to a little tiny gym out in the middle of the country in Indiana and have some players out there in warm-ups.
Frank Vogel's going to be out there being the coach,
reenacting some of the classic scenes. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what.
Well, maybe because are the Pacers going to be any good, though? So that's the other thing is you got to wear these early in the year because I think the Pacers are going to be okay. I don't think they're going to be anything great.
But even if they're not great, they're still going to get attention when they wear these.
Wow, you are a sap. Holy cow.
Yeah, I like it. Who doesn't love Hoosiers?
I'm not bagging on it.
It's an iconic sports
movie. Do they wear it once and that's it?
They're not going to wear it once, but they're going to wear them in select games. A few games is how the story...
So it'll be like the TNTs and the ABC games.
Yep.
They'll just wear them on the biggest nights and they can go sell a whole bunch of jerseys. No, yeah. I get it.
And they'll be mentioned on... If they lose by 50 the night they wear them, SportsCenter, the first thing when they roll in the highlights is going to be, wow, look at those Hickory jerseys the Pacers are wearing tonight.
They're playing like Hicks.
That's good.
Playing like Hicks.
Let's hope not.
You hope not.
Some of those Hicks can play.
All right, so then we have Scottie Pippen and Shaq that caught our eye today. So the war between Shaq and Scottie Pippen is still going on, and I'm not sure what to make out of all this. It's the middle of summer. There's nothing going on in the NBA. Shaq decides to go on social media and go after Scottie Pippen. Shaq basically said that Pippen wasn't a man without Michael Jordan. He was a woman named Scottina. So this started yesterday with the two going after each other on social media. Now it's Scottie saying, quote, easy big fella, if only you were as good at free throws as you are at talking smack.
And okay, that's part of the dangers, Brad, when I read this or saw the story that you presented with these two guys going back and forth of social media. It's hard to tell on Twitter what sometimes
context.
If people are joking. Yeah. Because it sounds like Scottie Pippen's response to Shaq was far less personal than Shaq just basically calling Scottie Pippen, you know, second fiddle, third fiddle, fourth fiddle, whatever. And Shaq, now it's officially like
war.
It's a war.
So Shaq called Pippen to follow through on this. When Shaq called Pippen a low rent sidekick, okay, Scottie shot back. Speaking of being a sidekick, if I recall correctly, you know a thing or two about that as well. Meaning, yeah, we're there together. He included pics of Shaq on his various teams playing with stars like LeBron, Kobe, Nash, and D-Wade. But Shaq didn't take it lying down. He posted a photo of Scottie's face on a woman's body with the caption Scottina Pippen, insinuating he was Michael Jordan's right-hand lady. He called Pippen a bum, posted a video of Shaq and Kobe burning Pippen in the Portland Trailblazers with the caption, see what happens at Scottie Pippen when Michael Jordan ain't protecting you. You lose a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter, and this happens. So now Matt Barnes is getting involved in this. Of course he is.
Oh, yes, of course. Right.
Of course he is, because Matt Barnes gets involved in every bit of trash talk. Matt Barnes is like, I don't know if he's the dirtiest player in the NBA, but he's in that Robert Horry-esque range. Just, you don't like him, Danny Ainge-esque, unless he's on your team, right? He's kind of in that, not kind of, he is in that category. So Matt Barnes gets involved in this. He says the NBA star is delusional. Scottie Pippen is delusional if he thinks the Bulls would beat the Lakers in a battle of the greats. Barnes didn't know about all the personal shots Shaq and Scottie were taking at each other when he saw him at LAX yesterday, but he definitely had an opinion on the 5-on-5 debate. Shaq claimed the 5 best Lakers of all time would smash the 5 greatest Bulls of all time. Pippen disagreed. Shaq called him a woman, a bum, and Michael Jordan's bitch. For the record, Matt played alongside of Shaq in the past. He'd probably do it again if this were to come up. So, you know, as this has escalated, are there wars that we would like to see? I don't know. It just feels like as we've gotten older, Charles used to be involved in some of this stuff, and Charles is not on social media, and there's probably a good reason for that. He's making bank. He's making money hand over fist rather than... Do you really have to sit here and go back and forth like two little guys in ninth grade in the locker room after fourth period gym? Because that's what this sounds like. This doesn't sound like grown men doing their thing. I mean, it's fine in the middle of summer. Maybe
exactly.
That's what Shaq's all about.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
Yeah, something to do in the middle of summer.
It's fine in the middle of summer.
Yeah. But look, if the two of them sat down at halftime of the Bulls against the Spurs to talk about this, I'd watch. Sure, I'd watch. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmatt.